and try and not cringe. Hi, everyone. You're listening to Bravo and the Brits, the podcast with a distinctly English take on all things reality TV. I'm here with Faith Richardson, who I'm very pleased to report is alive and well. Because I had the most awful dream the other day where you died in a car crash and I woke up and I was in like genuine distress and thinking, aww, like, oh my God, how am I going to do the pod without her? But then also, I just love the detail in my dream that after I learned of your untimely passing, I was like, oh, I need to get Greg something because he's going to be so upset. And I was in the line at an antique shop, which is very me anyway. And then that they just had at the like checkout desk, little glass Yoda figurines. And I was like, oh, Star Wars, yeah, cool. And then I bought Greg some little figurines, which I guess I was going to give to him at your funeral. I don't know.
Absolutely obsessed with that. You know, the worst thing is, though, is like, so I very rarely am in the car anymore. It's usually just when my parents pick me up to take me to theirs or whatever. And the morning he texted me, it was the one day where we were driving for like an hour to go to my horse riding lesson.
Oh, no. But you lied to me, didn't you? You did get in the car.
I did. I got in the car, but it was fine. I was on high alert at all times.
I would have been. No, because, you know, I just didn't want to risk if it was a premonition, but I've done some kind of retroactive analysis on it. And I think I know what it was. I think you in the dream represented the kittens, because this was the day before I had to give them back. And I think you died a literal death to mirror the metaphorical death. Losing my babies in such a cruel and sudden way.
Oh, honestly, well, personally, I'm honored that I was represented in a kitten, but it must have been so traumatic to give them back. I literally don't know how you did it.
I came into work with my sunglasses on so he couldn't see me crying.
Oh, Lou.
I know. I think even Anna, who is just sitting here doing some work on her phone, would also be crying. Yeah.
I genuinely don't know what I'm going to do now that I don't have them, to just like your little pictures and videos of them. Like, they brought me so much genuine joy.
Oh, they were always just piled up on top of me as well. Like, I was their mummy. But, you know, their daddy needs them too. When I brought them back, he was so happy. And I was like, oh, this is a person that also needs kitten in their life. So I couldn't even be sad about it.
Oh, that's the worst, isn't it? So selfish.
Anyway, let us not dwell on the sad things. This is the season finale, and this is Dorinda's last episode as a Real Housewife. And can I just say, what a plot twist at the end.
I know. It was not, even though I'd seen the preview, I had not seen that coming at all.
Well, I was like starting to check out a bit. You know, they were doing the writing, and I was actually thinking, God, well, that wasn't much of a finale.
Yeah,
and just everything in the last minute. Just
it was literally, I think I looked at the timing thing on it, and it was literally under 3 minutes where it all just went awry.
Because I had seen some tweets being like, oh my God, can't believe that Dorinda went out on that note. So that's why I was confused when the credits basically started rolling. Yeah. And I was like, well, that didn't seem like such a terrible.
Yeah, like, note, well, she got Aggie at bingo, and that was it. Like.
So strange. It was a strange choice for her, I feel.
Absolutely. It's weird. All through this episode, I was like, oh, maybe I will miss Dorinda. And then that final 3 minutes, I was like, no, I'm probably good.
I know. We've all been on the Dorinda coaster, let alone the Ramona coaster this season, in terms of how we felt about her.
I know. She just almost redeems herself, and then it all just goes tits up again.
So we start off with Sonia explaining that she's throwing a drag queen charity bingo night. And she's like, I like to raise funds for the LGBTQ. She makes it sound like a destination.
I know. Like some kind of holiday resort for the uber rich. I'm not going to lie, though. Drag queen bingo sounds like my idea of a good time.
I feel like that would be pretty fun. Christmas is generally in the air. We go to Ramona. She's wearing like a novelty fairy light necklace, which felt very off brand for her.
I was, just about to say, this was a very strange choice for her. I would not have had her pegged as the novelty Christmas item kind of a gal.
Maybe that was a concerted effort to just be a bit more likeable. I don't know.
Come across as jolly and maybe a bit sort of like whimsical.
Sonia is back with the long-suffering intern, and we find that Dorinda is recovering from her surgery.
Oh god, I know, the surgery loophole was just peculiar. I couldn't really figure out what it was that she'd had done.
Well, she said they removed something that was like yay big and that it had tentacles. I mean, I'm sure that was a slight exaggeration, but I mean, the producer retched, so.
I was just about to say, I love the kind of, the fourth wall got broken a lot in this episode, and I loved that bit where the interviewer was like,
I love the fourth wall just crumbling down, and just all walls, break down all walls, all borders.
Absolutely, I couldn't agree more. I love it. I love when it's like we get let into the secret and the joke.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I feel like everyone is just lolling constantly on Roni from either side.
Absolutely. I mean, what a job to have, to be like one of the cameramen or the producer on that show.
A dream. We also get another Martin cameo with Leah, which makes me so happy. That felt like a really nice kind of like bow on the present of this season. Like it was a full circle moment.
Absolutely. It was so nice to see him back and kind of in exactly the same setting as like when he first was on our screens and when we first met Leah. So I love that. And like I say, I think all the housewives need Mon as their therapist.
Did you listen to the interview he did with Ryan Bailey?
No. Oh, was it fun?
Faith, you have to. I'll send it to you with timestamps. Martin is amazing. I don't know if he exists outside of the boxing ring. Like, I don't know when he leaves that place, if he just kind of evaporates into thin air, but he had some really wise words.
Well, I've seen a lot of him on Leah's Instagram and her Instagram stories and things where they seem to just be like going for strolls around New York together and stuff. So I think they're like legit friends outside of the boxing ring now.
Adore.
Love it. I'm so obsessed with that relationship.
And we go from the dizzying heights of Leah and Martin and take an astonishing fall from grace and end up in the studio with Luann. She's with this producer guy and she's like, he wrote Living La Vida Loca and Living on a Prayer and is now producing Viva La Diva. Can anyone else sense a theme here?
This man is living a lot of things.
He's living, he's diving, he's divaing. Man's hairstyle will haunt me until the day that I die.
Oh god, I hate it. I loathe a man that has like a long braided moment.
A long braided mohawk
moment. Oh god, it was just, I mean, you've got to admire Lou's total lack of either awareness or the fact that she just does not care. Like, she is absolutely unabashed about the fact that she, you know, she clearly can't sing, but she's just making a full career out of this.
I mean, if your producer describes your singing take as a hoot and means that in a complimentary way, then that obviously says something about the quality of the singing.
I bet that man was sat there thinking, I worked with Bon Jovi.
Once upon a dream.
And now here I am listening to Luann De La Seps be like, oh yeah, Viva La Diva.
I mean, I have to say, you know, God bless the editors. This was our Christmas gift, belated, you know, including this scene in its full unedited, just unauto-tuned entirety.
I know. I love that they gave this as much airtime as they did. Like, they could have so easily just skipped over and been like, oh, look, she's working with a really good producer. Oh, she's in a booth. Oh, let's move on. But they really got into the nitty-gritty of watching Luann sing this song over and over again.
And it was just the sort of intermittent moaning as well and sort of deep exhaling that just really rounded it off.
Oh, and he was like, make it breathy and let your personality come through. And she was just like, no, oh god, I died.
It almost went into hacker territory. And yes, Faith, I've been streaming Viva La Diva ever since. Okay, it's great.
Nothing less.
I mean, how will you channel your inner diva? Because amazing. That's what Luann wants. She wants us all to do that more often. So whatever that means.
I'm here for it. I'm on board. I'll probably listen to it tomorrow as I get ready.
I think I'm just going to wear more sequins.
Yeah.
That seems to be the way forward, judging by this episode.
I was going to say, it seems to be these women's kind of like outfit of choice. No matter the mood, the location, the situation, or any other context, sequins is always the answer.
So then we go to Dorinda's and she's doing some extensive gutting of her old condo. She has Luke, our old Essex boy, with her. And we also get a Laurie Cooper cameo, who's sort of the famed real estate agent that kind of hovers around these ladies, who, again, is just such a wholesome social media presence. I do love her to pieces.
I love that she got that little moment. And I just love that Dorinda's just swanning around in like a novelty Christmas jumper for no reason, except that you just know she loves Christmas in all of its entirety. And it kind of, it made me a little bit sad. And I was like, we'll never get a Christmas in the Berkshires again. That was it.
Well, I've heard rumours and murmurs that they'll probably bring her back after a season or two, but that her drinking was starting to make the show look bad and not feeding into the storyline in any kind of meaningful or even slightly funny way, which sounds awful, but like Luann in the bushes was still relatively funny, and like, you know, Sonia being outrageous, still relatively funny.
Yeah, and even Leah like naked cartwheeling through the gardens, still
funny. Throwing tiki torches.
Like, I think that's the thing, and it's kind of just made it go into this like slightly like dark territory where it stopped being as fun and lighthearted and what we know like Roni for, and it's kind of become this like slightly nefarious like presence that's always just like, Dorinda's churning, it's happening, oh, and the whole episode's gone downhill.
Yeah, it's like a dark cloud looming over their plot point.
She's literally just the haunting of Real Housewives.
So Dorinda says this renovation is like a do-over for her, clearing out kind of her memories of John and Richard. And I actually, it kind of struck me in this episode that the producers are kind of giving a lot of weight to like, what's Dorinda going to do next, which felt like preparing us for her departure.
Yeah, I was definitely, you could get that sort of vibe from it 100%. And it was, and it's these kind of moments where she seems a little bit calmer and she seems a little bit sort of lighter and nicer, and then we get later on in the episode where it all unravels once again. But in
and that's the frustrating thing, isn't it, because you see her doing the renovation and she's kind of casting off the shackles of this old place with all these memories, and you root for her.
Yeah, she could have so easily had like a Sonia-esque rise where it's like she's out with the old and she's doing all these fabulous new things by herself and she's single and taking on all this stuff, but instead we just got bitter and angry.
Yeah, just back to her usual ways. And then we get actually a check into the townhouse. I mean, at this point it's basically devolved into a DIY SOS episode.
They could all do with a little bit of Nick Knowles in their life, I feel.
A positive influence on the interiors, because I don't think there are many interiors that I would sort of trade my souls for on Roni, although I remember that Bethany in particular had terrible taste, especially in art.
Oh, and she kept painting everything in that skinny girl red, which, you know, is questionable for a brand color as it is, but then when it comes to painting your house in it, like, red is not a house color for me.
It's very heavy for a house.
Yeah, like literally our old house that we lived in. The people that had lived there before, it was like decorated like a 70s porn set. Like the living room was like not quite burgundy, but like a dark blood red. And then the chimney breast was wallpapered in that kind of black metallic swirled wallpaper. And it had like black leather sofas and it was revolting. And then when we pulled up one of the rugs and things, and there was just like porn magazines from like the 80s just hidden around the apartment.
I mean, God, that does kind of make me wistful for a time I never knew, where you had to like hide your porn. There's just something really funny about that, like physically hiding your porn.
Honestly, he'd say he'd done it like some kind of fucking scavenger hunt. They were like hidden. It was like when he'd left, he just left them around the house. They were like in the oven and in cupboards and under bath mats. And like, we must have found about 40.
A sexy surprise awaits at every turn.
Oh, and they were all the really cheapy cringe ones, like the porn equivalent of Take a Break magazine.
Low budget.
Yeah.
Reader's Wives. I knew I was going out with someone possibly too old for me when he referenced Reader's Wives.
No.
I think he was being ironic. I don't know. I have to say that there is a marked improvement in the interior design in Sonia's townhouse. It's looking good. It's looking better.
It's gone from that, like, I get what she was trying to cling on to with the old, like, red carpets and the cream and gold and all that, because, like, you know, in that sort of era, that was what denoted wealth and luxury and, like, you know, upmarket interiors. But now that it's got, like, cream carpets and nice, clean, fresh, open furniture and spaces and things like that, it just looks so much better. Because before, I was like, I probably couldn't have, like, if you'd gave me that townhouse, it'd have been like, oh, no, you're all right, thank you. Whereas now, I'd be like, yeah, snap that shit up.
Yeah, exactly. Do you know what? It's got a very kind of Russian vibe to it.
Yes!
Or it used to, because like you say, it was that very kind of classical wealth, you know, big kind of Baroque and like mahogany furniture and sort of cherubim paintings and things like that.
Oh god, I did love the when it was doing like the flashbacks of all the different rooms, and there was one where I think it was Sonia's bedroom, and there was just that painting of her on the wall where she's like lounging. I think she's naked in it.
Yeah, so I saw that. It looked like she had bred with an octopus.
She had limbs of a daze.
There was one on the staircase that was the same pose as the one that she had in the other room, but it was all like kind of done abstract, but it just made her look like she sort of had branches coming out of her.
Oh god, I mean, the art taste in this entire group really is questionable at best, isn't it?
And then we learned that Ramona's version of YOLO is living life. LL.
I love that every time you repeat something Ramona said, you do it in the most perfect, like, Ramona inflection.
No, that's the thing. Like, the actual, like, imitation is just not there, but it is just the intonation, like, the stress on the syllables. Living life. Living life. Which, let's face it, is just not super catchy.
It's not really. It's not the mantra that I think is going to catch on from the season.
How many interns does Sonia have in that house?
Oh my god, I can only assume at least 30 plus. There is a new one every fucking episode, and they just seem to hang around in like dribs and drabs in various rooms, like looking at their phone and looking like they're not sure what they should be doing.
So I've decided that QAnon has it all wrong, right? The mole children aren't being held underground in New York having their adrenochrome harvested. They're all in the basement of Sonia's townhouse, and they're just like rearranging her social calendar frantically. And that's why she's like hastily trying to move this house on to a new buyer, because she needs to eliminate the paper trail.
Oh, God.
Allegedly. Don't say
allegedly.
I'm always scared dealing with American subjects, because they just love to sue.
They love a lawsuit in America. It's the American way.
There's nothing more like American and patriotic than just the right to just die from like state neglect of healthcare. Or just my gun.
And then just blame the liberals for it all.
Oh god, I'm gonna watch a documentary on that tonight, I think. Oh yeah, I'm like changing my date a bit, because we've had a coronavirus surge in the northeast, and we've run out of tests, Faith. Did you know that? For the entire region. Isn't that good?
That's fantastic. I'm really, really thrilled with this news.
Schools are reopening, and you know, this was the time. This was the right time to just run out.
I mean, I can't imagine why we weren't better prepared.
I read the article about it, and basically one of the like local ministers was like, we're sending our tests down south to get processed, even though we have the local capacity, facility and resources to do it here. I don't understand. And I was just like, I can't read any more of this, because I'm going to lose my mind.
That's just too stressful around. It's far too stressful for what should have been a lovely, enjoyable Friday evening.
I'm just going to hibernate. I am. I'm just cancelling everything. So lame. Anyway, Leah and her family are decorating gingerbread houses.
This was super adorable. And I actually really enjoyed this scene. Like, it's nice to see Leah and her mum obviously forging some kind of healthy relationship.
Yeah, I feel like Bonnie is making the effort.
She is, I think so. And I think that it's kind of nice. You can tell they have quite an open, if not occasionally abrasive, relationship with each other.
I mean, they've obviously made some headway, I would say. Because she did the party, she did the nice speech, she was there, and then she's doing this. So also maybe having Kira around is quite a good, because both of them will have to be on their best behavior for the sake of.
Yeah, it's kind of almost like a really good buffer where it's like they have to talk normally and calmly, much less than screaming or shouting or falling out. But no, I thought this was nice. It was just a nice little sort of back and forth, although I did fucking love the chef woman's face when Leah was just like, oh, well, you told me to go to hell the other day, and Bonnie was just like, but what did you say to me first? He was just like, fuck off. And this chef woman was like, she never heard so much as a cuss word before, and she was like stony-faced, shocked that these women were talking like this
in front of the children.
In front of the gingerbread.
In front of the gingerbread man. How dare you. I love the gingerbread man from Shrek.
Oh, I know. It's truly, I'm not a big like Shrek fan, but I know. I'm I know you have a love for like animated films, but just it just doesn't do it for me. Is this you falling out with me?
This podcast has been fun as a project. It's been nice getting to know you. I'm afraid I will not have you speak about my nearest and dearest like that. And I must away. All right, I can't believe what I've just heard, but you're perfect in every other way. So I think on balance, I'll forgive you.
I do appreciate it. Thank you.
Bunny suggests doing a digital detox over the holiday. Have you ever done one of those?
So, weirdly, in our second year of uni, I can't remember what point it was that they were trying to make, but they all set as an assignment where for like 24 hours we had to go without our phone. And because I'm such like a fucking goody two shoes, I was just like, yeah, I'll do that. That's fine. And I survived. I got up in the morning. I didn't use my phone. I got on the metro. I lost my metro ticket. I had to pay a fine. And then it was just like, fuck this. Like, I need to complain to somebody.
Made the effort.
I made the effort. I think I made it approximately 90 minutes in before I needed to complain about something. And then I was like, no, I'm going to put it away. I'm going to be really good again and, you know, get back on it and do this. And I managed it intermittently for a day. But I'm not going to lie, it wasn't easy and it was not consistent.
I've never done like a full-on digital detox where I've like turned it off, not looked completely, but what I did do at the start of the new year was turn off push notifications.
Yes, that's been such a big thing for me as well. I did the same with like emails and things like that, because I was just like, I don't need to be getting work emails and checking them every second of the day. I don't need to be, you know, given messages or, you know, notifications from like shopping apps and things like that. It's like information overload, and then you feel obliged to respond to it immediately, which just makes you feel stressed and overworked and like you're failing at everything, in my mind anyway.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you. And I've like muted every, I'm trying to do something where I'm like checking WhatsApp less regularly as well.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things where it's like I'm trying to get better about if somebody texts me, it's like, I don't need to respond immediately. Like, their world isn't going to implode if I don't get back to them for a couple of hours because I'm working or because I'm actually just relaxing or I'm busy or what have you. And I think it's that thing of like, it's so easy now to feel guilty that you're not available 24/7, but that's such an unhealthy way of being.
Yeah. Yeah. I completely agree with you. And the other thing is, I think if you start off by being very available with people, they come to expect that. Yeah. So whether that's employers or whether that's like me, like, I don't know, getting back into dating and all of that, like if you talk to a guy and respond to everything immediately and then you just don't for a couple of days, they're going to think like, oh, I've done something to upset them. But like, it might just be that you've had a really busy couple of days, you know, and I think the same thing, you know, when it's vice versa. So I'm guilty of it as well. And yeah, it's just a minefield.
No, it is. I'm exactly the same where it's like, I used to be super kind of like available to everybody because I was just like a people pleaser. And I was like, oh, well, you know, if they want to speak to me, I owe it to them to speak to them and things like that. And it was actually when Greg and I started going out, like he would literally not reply to texts for like 3 days at a time. And I had to just learn that it was just how he was and it wasn't me specific. And then I was like, oh, it is actually fine to just not, you know, immediately be there ready and waiting for somebody whenever they need you.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. This is a bit of a stretch, but
3 days, I'd be worried too, to be fair. If I was texting someone, I'd be like, you okay? If I don't answer you for 3 days, like, please just check in on me.
I will.
But yeah, like a day, 24 hours. Absolutely. Or like if you're trying to like phase someone out, leave it a few days.
Absolutely. I think that's a fair balance.
So then we go to F, marry, kill. Reassuringly, we do learn that this is like a sort of dress rehearsal, which explains the underwhelming setting, which we commented on last week.
Because yeah, I kind of got like, as soon as it began, I got like secondhand cringe just because it was like the audience was so small and the venue was so underwhelming. And even if it was a presentation, I was just like, it's my worst nightmare is being like in a very small audience of people trying to do like comedy and shows.
And also that the lights stayed on for the entire thing. So you would see every single facial expression. This is, I'm obviously pretty used to talking in front of people now, but there's nothing worse than doing a lecture and you can just see people's expressions. And like, even if most people are enjoying it and you can tell or like interested, you'll find that one person that just looks like they want to just die. And then you just feel so awful. It's so easy to like fixate on faces in a crowd when the lights are on.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I mean, every time I had to do like presentations and things, like they're always like, oh, you should be like making eye contact or you should be like looking at people and stuff. And I just find it easier to literally just like look even just marginally over the heads of people because at least it looks like I'm sort of looking at somebody.
Yeah. Also, like, I'm not being funny. I don't want anyone to think that I'm like flirting with them, especially not at work. Like, I don't know, I just feel like maintaining eye contact, that's a bit of like a sometimes. Yeah. No, I mean, I also have very sexy eyeballs, it's not my fault.
It's both a blessing and a curse,
as my mum would say. CTBE, come to bed. Eyes. Come to bed eyes. Yeah, she like spouted that one off at dinner one day because we were, she was doing, she was like, oh, can I go on the app where you shop for men? And then she found one, she's like, oh, he's got a bit of CBTE. And I was like, cock and ball torture, electro cognitive behavioral, no, come to bed eyes. So apparently that was like a well-known expression back in the day.
Oh, I was, that one's completely lost on me, but I'm not mad at it.
No, I love it. I love it. I'm gonna use it all the time now. We're dragging this one into the 21st century.
1000%. I think it has earned its respectful place.
The opening of this show kind of felt like a talk show. You know, Luann comes out to this sort of like elevator music, everyone's clapping, she's doing a little like prancy walk. What did you think about her outfit for this?
I didn't mind the outfit so much. I mean, again, I don't know if it was just the sort of the setting and the overall context of it all. I just feel like anything other than maybe, you know, jeans and a t-shirt would have been. But I just, you know, Luann, she kind of can't go wrong when it comes to fashion. And I don't know how she does it.
Yeah, I just, she looked nice, but I just can't get into a halter neck style. I don't know. I just feel like it never looks that flattering, even on someone as like fit as Lou.
Yeah, and I just, for me, the tambourine really did it. Like, it felt so unnecessary.
Oh, she's channeling her inner Fleetwood Mac. Love it. Oh,
she's just sort of trotting around with this tambourine, like, jangling over the top of what she was saying. And, I mean, I know we didn't get to see the whole show, but I could not place when or why she needed a fucking tambourine.
I mean, I felt like Sonia was correct in saying that Luann kind of needed a new bit. Like, she needs new material.
100% though, it has been done to death and it's so stale now. And I also think half of her, well, probably the majority of her jokes are based on housewife specific scenarios and things like that. And whilst I assume the majority of her audience is there because of the housewives, it's also one of those things where she was like, oh, I've not been falling in any bushes this time we went to Mexico. And the kind of crowd tittered a little bit, but it was like, people who don't watch the show are just like, okay. Like,
well, also the people that do watch the show are like, yeah, that was like 4 years ago. And like, yeah, it was one time. So yeah. I feel like Sonia is naturally funny. And I feel like Sonia is funny. Sonia is more naturally funny. Luann is funny in spite of herself, but Sonia is like intrinsically funny. Sonia has good timing. She's got good like pop culture references. And she doesn't, this is, I think, the crucial difference. Sonia, at her core, doesn't actually take herself that seriously, if at all. Whereas Luann, deep down at her core, cabaret is like the most important serious affair in her life.
No, 1000%. I think it is. It's that thing, like you say, like Sonia has like excellent like comedic timing, and everything you can tell is like said in jest with like a tongue in her cheek, and she can take the piss out of people without it seeming vicious or mean. Like when she was like, oh well, Tinsy's unfuckable, the whole crowd was like and then started to laugh, and it was the first proper laugh because it was off the cuff and it was not set up or anything like that. Whereas Luann has this like, she's read her jokes from a script that somebody else has written, and then she's just like formulaically going, well, now I say this funny thing, and now I say this funny thing with no actual.
And then I wait.
Pause for laughter.
She might even say at one point, pause for laughter, thinking that she's meant to say it. Yeah, I just think Sonia's just funny.
It should be Sonia's show with Lou as guest. Like, I think that would work so much better. Because I that when she was like, oh, marry, fuck, kill, like, isn't a new thing either. Like, some of us have fucked everyone's that list gets real short.
I also thought that was very funny.
Love that. I did love, though, you could tell that Leah was a newbie to the whole cabaret thing because she actually enjoyed the show. And she's like,
yeah.
Women, like, say that, she like, you know, go on about it. I had a great time. It was like, just you wait until you've been to 15 of them.
I was gonna say, she hasn't been dragged kicking and screaming to the dress rehearsal, to the studio, to the styling.
Oh god, honestly, you can tell she's definitely fresh meat to this.
And then they kind of toast at the end and they're backstage and Sonia's like, I want to get back on the workout wagon. But, you know, honestly, I think she actually looks lovely throughout this. Like, this season, at points, she has looked a bit like puffy in the face, but not in a weight being put on kind of way, just in a sort of like hungover and delicate kind of way. Like,
in that kind of water retention, probably drank a few too many last night and probably had something very salty and carb laden, and then as woke up the next day and been like, fuck it, I can keep going with this, and filmed. But like, I'm not gonna lie, I love the idea of Sonia and Leah working out together and like going to a fitness class. Like, I think it's so endearing to imagine Sonia just like leaping around doing what Leah's doing.
I need to see Sonia and Martin.
Oh god, that would be phenomenal.
I need to see Sonia trying to sleep with Martin.
I was just about to say Sonia would probably be all over that. Oh god, I can imagine it being a really like, she would not like know how to take him, whereas like Tinsley didn't really know what his jokes were, whereas like Sonia can do that banter back kind of thing. And I just think it would be a fantastic little comedy duo of like her and Leah training with Martin. What a spin-off.
Faith, can I tell you something?
Mm-hmm.
I think Martin's a really gentle lover.
I'm not gonna lie, I hadn't considered it, but I can see where you're coming from.
I had considered it.
Do you think he needs a bandana on?
Oh. I was gonna say something about he could put it around mine anyway. Basically, you gotta set me up with these skateboarders.
Sold.
So the ladies go backstage, they do a toast. Leah's like so gracious about all of this. Like you say, she genuinely had a good time. And I was basically like, oh, you just remove Ramona and Dorinda from like any given situation and it's all good vibes, which is also, you know, questionably watchable TV if that was the case the entire time. But for a nice little pause break, I was happy that Lou and Sonia got to do their thing and get some recognition for that. It felt nice.
It was, and it was kind of nice that it sounds weird, but it was nice that it was about them, because I feel like Ramona and Dorinda sort of suck the air out of situations quite a lot, and it becomes very centered on them, like for better or worse. It's always centered around who they fell out with or what they're saying or what they're doing and that sort of thing. So it was kind of nice to see these three, who are big characters and big presences, but are usually having to share that scene with one of those two who were arguably like a much more forceful person.
Yeah.
So it was kind of like these three just having a genuinely good time. And like, I think the three of them are really close friends, like outside of the series.
Yeah. It felt like a nice kind of pause break.
Yeah. 100%.
So Rob has a famous pasta dish, which I'm very into. I feel like he gives a generous pasta portion.
I can imagine he does. I imagine he's a little bit of a feeder, like in that kind of hearty, like, oh, you've got to eat more, you're too skinny kind of a way. Mm-hmm. I don't know why I made him kind of like a Waluigi Italian American.
A Waluigi. No, but I get what you mean. Even though he doesn't actually sound like that, he has the energy of someone who sounds like that.
Isn't he? I think he's got a kind of like one of those sort of like very over the top but also slightly nurturing personalities where you just want him to hold you and feed you pasta.
Oh yeah. So we go to the drag queen bingo party. It does look like a lot of fun.
It does. I have to say, it looks like it would be a good time. However, my one complaint with it is that it seemed like a very big space with a very few people in it. It arguably looked more full and busy towards the end, but initially it seemed quite empty.
Why were they not able to pack it out? Because I thought that when Lou did her little performance and there was just like a little huddle of people, and I thought, God, there's like no one at this.
Yeah, I found that really bizarre. And I mean, like, I would pay a fucking fortune to be at Sonia Morgan's drag queen bingo. What a night out.
True. Although I suppose if you were going to ban everyone straight as a matter of principle, that might kind of tighten the pool a bit.
Oh my God, Ramona's face when she realised there wasn't a single eligible straight man in the room.
And she had bought her friend that she sleeps with but doesn't.
Ron. Yeah, when she was just like, but she seemed like laughably at the idea of the fact that like they could be actually on a date. But then it's like, well, why have you brought him if you're not on a date? What reason have you got to bring him to gay drag queen bingo?
Strange.
It's very very, very bizarre.
I really didn't like Sonia's hair, but I do understand that she had to commit to a big hair moment for the occasion.
Yeah, I feel like she actually, if she'd have worn what she wore in her confessionals, like that little pink velvet dress with like the pink lips and the blonde hair, like she looked so much better and so much more like on brand for this kind of like draggy bingo kind of thing. Like Leah did such a good, like it was almost like Romy and Michelle. Michelle, that would be a whole different vibe. But yeah, like Leah did that sort of like Romy and Michelle, like 90s supermodel-y kind of thing. And I love that she fucking wore trainers with it.
Oh, I thought she looked great. Do you remember in like 2008 when everyone was into wearing prom dresses, like a hoop earrings and trainers and sang like Lily Allen?
It was just, I just don't even know. I don't know how she can pull that off and look so phenomenal. Like, she looked younger than I am. She was the only person there that could pull off that kind of vibe. And I have to admit, though, the other women did commit to it. I mean, Dorinda showing up in a turban and a sling was a mood.
Yeah, they did commit. You know, they were fully kind of metallic foiled. It was, Luann had obviously her statement necklace and statement hat.
There was only so many statements you can cram into one outfit. And I felt like the necklace, the hat and the dress was a lot.
Yeah, it did occur to me over the course of this scene that I don't think Luann should be left alone around drag queens for extended periods of time, because their compliments will inflate her ego. You know, whether the compliments are like sincere at all, I just think that she runs the risk of truly becoming, you know, an egomaniac of dire proportions.
Oh, 100%. And I think it's that thing. She also has the capacity to take on all the drag queen aesthetic by like pure osmosis. Like necklaces will get bigger and the hair will get bigger and heels will get higher and all of this. And I can so see it happening for her.
Yeah, Leah, I don't think has ever looked better than she did with this sort of like dynasty hair. Oh, it was just amazing.
So good. I literally want to like frame it.
And so at this point, we kind of feel like the episode's wrapping up and Sonia opens up the floor to Luann. And I mean, you know, I think the expressions as the camera panned around the room said it all. But, you know, they always end up in a little kind of bop hair flip moment to her music. I mean, I know they sort of have to, but.
I think it's one of those things where it's arguably so, so bad that it becomes like a novelty, where you can't help but enjoy yourself. Do you know what I mean? It's like when NSYNC comes on in the middle of like a night out and you're like, God, this is so cringe, but I'm having the best time just being stupid with it. And I think it was probably one of those kind of moments. Although I did notice that they all seem to know the words. And I was like, did they just dish out a song sheet before this where it's like, here's the lyrics, guys, sing along.
I mean, aren't the words just mainly Viva la Diva, Viva la Diva?
It did seem like that was pretty much it.
I mean, I think that was the heart, the crux of the song.
Oh, God. It was, I mean, watching it again, it was the secondhand embarrassment thing. But you've got to admit, the girl commits. She commits heavily.
Finish your PhD in drag, Viva la Diva. Nah, that was shit. Sorry. Do you know what? It's the end of a long week.
I appreciated it nonetheless.
Thank you. Yeah. Sonia makes me laugh when she's like, well, you know, I just think it's really good that Lou is taking accountability, that she can be a diva, you know, and she's really accepting that as a part of her personality. I just loved how much Sonia was reading into this as part of her, like, self-actualization. I mean, I guess the first step in solving your problem is admitting that you have one.
Oh, 1,000%. But like Sonia really just made this so much deeper than it ever could have possibly been.
So then we get the credits and we think that everything, well, it's not the credits, but I wouldn't know how you call it. The kind of
cards?
What?
Closing cards?
Yeah, closing cards sounds good.
Yeah.
So Luann sold her roundhouse and is writing a book. We learn that Dorinda is also writing a book.
Oh, called Making It Nice, Making It Through, which I don't know, it might be therapeutic for her, but oh, what a title.
Yeah, well, you know that some marketing person's thought that one up.
100%. Whoever the copywriter was for these cards, by the way, worked overtime because they were fantastic.
Leah is embracing the Upper East Side and casting off the fuckboy shackles, and we learn that she's gone sober again. So I was like, oh no, yeah. Is she going to be so iconic next season without it?
No, I think she's got it in her to be just as hilarious and just as no bullshit without the alcohol.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think so too.
Even her kind of like, I elevate this shit bitch was like, obviously, so I mean, granted hungover, but still sober at a hair salon, so.
Yeah, no, you make a valid point. And I do think this season has been so like drinking centric, and I think that the producers kind of realize that, and I think they are going to try and maybe take a bit of a step away from it next season.
Yeah, I think they've got a lot of heavy backlash for that.
Sonia had a facelift and we've seen the results, and I think we can all agree that she looks fucking fantastic.
Like incredible. Also, that card was a fucking scream, where I was like, despite the facelift, Sonia's townhouse didn't sell, so she's taken off the market. Sonia's own facelift had much more success.
Yeah, I love it. And then we have Ramona moving up in the world, literally just moving to a higher up flat in her apartment block for the Instagram views. Well, I can't fault her.
No, I mean, honestly, if I had the money, I'd do the same.
Yeah, we all love to pretend that we think we're above it, but deep down, we're not.
Absolutely not.
I see an avocado on a slice of sourdough. I'm putting that on the internet, okay? I have no shame.
And then we just get to truly the most bizarre 180, I think, of the season.
Yes, yeah, so this was weird on a couple of levels. So we think that everything's going to wrap up. And then as soon as Leah just mentions Tinsley's name, it was in the context of Tinsley introduced me to you guys. And Dorinda loses her rag. And then Sonia seems to be on Dorinda's side and seems to be agreeing with her. And that to me was the biggest twist.
It was just so peculiar. And it's almost like a red flag to a bull. Like, I don't understand why the mere mention of her name brings her out in this like frothing, spitting, angry, confrontational rage. Like, literally all Leah was trying to say was like, Tinsley introduced us, but obviously we've all became really good friends outside of that, and I'm really happy about that, which is a nice fucking thing to say. Like, Dorinda could have actually taken that as a one-up on Tinsley, like, yeah, you might have introduced her, but she's our friend now.
Like, yeah, there was exactly
so many avenues that could have gone down. But just the fact that Dorinda flipped on Leah, who's been a really, really good friend to her this season, so easily, was truly terrifying.
This was just so ugly for Dorinda.
Yeah, this was...
And the other thing that I don't understand is she's talking about Tinsley left and she breached her contract and she put, you know, she fobbed off the show. And I thought, well, okay, even if she did do that, and I understand it's a show that you're on and that you participate in and you stick to your contract, so it must be frustrating when other people don't stick to yours. You know, Dorinda's career, arguably, was never under threat.
No.
Tinsley's departure. I think Dorinda has compromised her own career, the way that she's been acting towards Tinsley, because I'm sure that has something to do with it, along with the drinking, but... You know, yeah. If a cast member leaves and breaches their contract, that doesn't take the whole show down with it. You know, that's not really how it works. So.
Oh, and it was this thing of like, oh, like Tinsley almost ruined our show, this, that and the other. And it's like, I think that was you.
Yeah, like, it was.
And then she just had this wild delusion where she was like, I am a principled person, as she's like spitting in Leah's face and jabbing her finger in Luann's, like, oh,
and then when Luann's like, that arm seems to be working okay all of a sudden.
Oh my god, I lost so much of that, and it was clearly just trying to break the mood and the tension and stuff. And Dorinda got so close to Luann, like, I don't blame Luann for like recoiling backwards in horror. And then we just got Ramona screeching like, you're spitting all over.
Yeah, who'd have thought by the end of the season I'd be on... First of all, who would have thought that Luann would actually be such a likable person over the course of this season? Because she had, you know, the one blow-up with Sonia. Yeah. But because they didn't really hold it against each other, it made us hard for us to hold it against them. And yeah, overall, like, I think she's been quite centred. Oh my God, I can't believe I'm saying this.
How did this happen? This was truly the surprise that none of us saw coming. But yeah, Luann has really possibly been my second favourite on the series. Dare I say it?
I know.
Oh, God.
I did have a thought about the Dorinda thing. And I wondered, is this alcohol and painkillers?
Exacerbating
something that was probably already there and going to manifest. But I just wonder if that was a catalyst, maybe.
Right. Possibly, because I mean, earlier in the episode, she did mention something about being on like Vicodin or something for her arm. So this, I mean, it could have possibly explained this scene. I mean, not so much any of the others, but like, or unless I suppose if she's been in pain with her arm for a while, she could have been taking painkillers to help with that, and then it's sort of not worked well with the alcohol. But oh, it was just so bizarre, and it was just such a sour note. Like, if she'd have just not done that and left it where it was, I would have actually been like, oh, maybe I'll probably miss her on the show. But this was so bitter and vicious and nasty. And I was just like, oh, good riddance.
Yeah. Yeah. I think so too. Oh, yeah.
I enjoyed Leah doing like a pit sniff and just being like, oh, I'm sweating.
Leah's great. I'm really glad that we have her on this season. And again, I haven't massively missed Bethany at all, yeah. Which I'm surprised by.
I would have liked to have seen her and Leah interact or have at least some sort of crossover. Like, it would have been nice if there was even like two episodes where they kind of intermingled and then left.
I'm sure they're going to do that at some stage with Bethany, don't you think?
Yeah, there's got to be something, like the way that Jill kind of pops up every so often.
She'll be
like
a friend of, I'm sure.
1,000%.
I mean, Bethany needs to remember this show made her.
Oh, yeah, 1,000%. Like, this was not... It was not a case of, like, her being incredibly rich and popular before the show. So she definitely owes it a lot. So it'd be nice to see her come back. I'm actually really excited for the reunion, dare I say. Usually I'm kind of impassive about them. Like, I sort of... I'll half-heartedly watch them just to round off the series, but I'm actually really looking forward to this one.
And it's not on Zoom as well, which is such a blessing. So I was thinking, because it's not on Zoom, should we cover it?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm down.
I'm for it if you are.
Yeah, 100%. I'd be genuinely thrilled to discuss what they're discussing.
No, I mean, I'm really looking forward to it.
That preview, I mean, we've got Sonia hand sanitizing her legs because she wanted them to have extra shine.
Dorinda's dating someone, apparently.
And Ramona's screaming at Dorinda and telling her to go to church.
Tinsley's back, and then we see COVID coming into the narrative.
Turn on, like, Ramona for not wearing a mask, which, I mean, fair enough. But
and then Ramona being like, I don't wear my mask in the ocean. I don't wear my mask in the ocean. Oh, God. And then Andy seems to get pretty pissy at one point as well, and I always like it when Andy loses his rag, because that make you know there's obviously something.
Yeah, there's kind of, you can tell that it's not just being spliced together for editing purposes. Like, it must have just been this insane and over the top and intense.
I'm so looking forward to it. I'm excited. You can follow Faith on Instagram at Faith_Elizabeth, 2 H's in the Faith, and you can check out her writing work at faithrichardson.co.uk. You can follow me on Twitter at Louisa G. Rogers, and you can check out my work, louisarogers.net. And you can also follow this podcast on Instagram. We don't post much, but if you want to stay up to date with new episodes and the odd Bravo meme, then definitely head over there. And that is at Bravo and the Brits. We'll speak to you on Friday for reunion chats. I'm looking forward to it.